You're listening to the Women as in Art podcast, and I am your host, Leah Schrager.
Hi, my name's Emerald Gruen, and I'm here talking to Jasmine Mainsbridge on Women as in Art. And Jasmine is a professional practicing artist whose work is best described as the meeting of exploration and refinement. Jasmine has taken her art to a number of mediums: sculpture, large-scale public works, intimate paintings for private collection. She is not afraid to venture outside an established comfort zone. Whatever her choice of art form, Mainsbridge brings a refined and meticulous hand to the work. Her deliberation and contemplation are evident at all times. The work provokes thought and wonder and gives the viewer the chance to apply their personal storytelling as they unpack the geometry and portals of Mainsbridge's imagined world. So good to see you today.
And what an introduction. Thank you.
It's so well done. I mean, I feel like it really encaptures you in such a succinct way. And when I saw that, I thought, yeah, this is wonderful to just introduce you to an American and worldwide audience. And you've just come back from a trip in Sydney for your exhibition at Michael Reid Gallery.
Yeah, I really like to, as often as I possibly can, show up with my work. Like, and it's always such a strange thing to create work, you know, in the studio context, and it's very intimate and it's with me and it feels like all of my little children. And then to come, you know, and see them in their studio, in, you know, in the context of presentation in a gallery, and to connect, it's like, oh, hello. Like, to be back with the paintings and then to like be that conduit for to help people. I feel like when I'm with the work, it's like, and it doesn't always happen, obviously, it's just this little narrow this little portal in time where I can be with the work and help people understand it. Or, you know, I think that there's like the energy of the painting will be the same as the energy of me as a person, and so when we're together, it's really cohesive and nice. So I do always make the effort as often as I can to be with the work.
And how did the exhibition come about with Michael Reid?
That was a conversation. So, you know, I sit on things for a long time and I'm not too obsessed with how they happen. And I have an email, I think in 2012, between myself and Amber Creswell Bell, because she interviewed me for the Design Files, which is quite a big
design. I love design that website. It's great. It's
and so at that point in time, she was writing and working for Lucy Feagans, who runs the Design Files. And so then she interviewed me and then we became friends. And then we had a conversation because I haven't had an exhibition in Sydney since 2018, which is pre-COVID for a variety of reasons. And she just said to me, what are you doing? Do you want a show in Sydney? Because she curates the that gallery space. Mm-hmm. And so it was, you know, with most things and even speaking to you, I'm very, my whole art life is extremely organic and led by relationships with people. That's how I like it.
I love that. And you're very, I love you've got the, you know, you're very focused and you're persistent, which is what you need as an artist. And you're also patient and you're able to let things just flow with the universe.
Yeah. No, it feels like it's so important. Like, it's the juxtaposition between, and I think I said to you, like, I can really want to do something and I have an idea, but then, you know, and it's age and experience too, of like, then that has to be handed over to divine timing.
Exactly, exactly.
This is what I want, but I don't know how it's going to happen.
Yeah, and so your work, how did, for instance, Sarah Harden, who I'm very much a fan of, and she's a collector of mine, and she's just such a gracious woman, how did she come across your work Well, and see, this is part of the CEO of Hello Sunshine.
Another serendipity
to find you in Australia, right?
Yeah. So I've done a lot of work with a particular charity called Create Impact they build schools in Ethiopia. It's educating girls, but then it's grown to clinics and everything. So I put a really large piece into this auction, and I end up traveling to the school that they built and painting there as well. Long story. But then so Sarah's
you traveled to Ethiopia for that.
Yeah, I painted in Ethiopia. That's
incredible.
It's amazing.
Well, side note, how do you manage that with five kids? Like, just tell me that.
So my five children, there's 18 years between the first one and the last one.
I know, which is clever.
So I have another organic unfolding is my parenting journey. So I had my first daughter when I was 17, and then I'm pretty sure it's my last child when I was 35. And so the older two have always been really involved in, and I put a post on Instagram recently because my daughter actually traveled with me while I breastfed my baby to do a show years ago. And so I have children that we have this like larger, more interconnected, supportive family. And then in 4 or 5 years ago, divorced from my husband, or divorced from, he's my ex-husband. Mm-hmm. But, and so my children, we do 50-50.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which is, there was a huge grief attached to that, like letting go of like parenting your children and being the ever-present person. And, these things happen, and I didn't really have, you don't have so much control over that. But now it's like I've come into this space of really understanding that this is another way that my life has meant to be.
Yeah.
And the parenting 50-50 means that, as you know, I am so able to focus on my work. Mm-hmm. And that brings me, it's the way things are meant to be. And then I have my children, I parent quite intensely. But for example, I'm about to go to France on Monday for two weeks.
Yeah, how's that? Yeah.
We're very good friends. He's got a great partner. Mm-hmm. And so it's very unstructured. It's structured as much as the children need it to be for their consistency. But then, we're gone for 2 weeks. So
what about the other three children? Because aren't they with the second or the third? Is it the third?
Yeah, so I've got a 27, 24, and then 14, 12, and 9. So the young three are from my, they live with their father. The other two obviously are off in the world. So we do 50-50. It's a week on, week off. But then if I have, I travel, I've always traveled, and even when we were married, I always traveled like this, 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Australia is so far, and I think I was wanting to come and see you in LA, and I was like, I'm just going to be pushing.
Yeah,
I find 2 weeks my children don't really miss me because
we
they're
should
busy.
Do it when we have a show scheduled, so it's for a specific.
Yeah, absolutely. Then exactly. Then
pressure. Yeah.
And I also like to in 2 weeks, and this is another whole conversation, but in 2 weeks as a woman, say the residency world, and there's so much in the art world that is really it's impossible for me to go for a 3 month residency to Iceland, as much as I'd love to do that, but I can do 2 weeks in Iceland, and I can go, I'm such an intense person, I can like gather and this whole show in Sydney, I had a residency for 2 weeks, and I drew, I mean, I'm really
in France, right?
Fast, I'm focused, and I drew up almost all that work and did all the outlining in France. So the work is like really fresh in its
perfect. In its, and then you just need that time because you've got the memory of the trip in France, and then you can execute it when you're in your studio, when you have your kids around and you're co-parenting.
Yeah. I bring it all home, and I paint, and I'm cooking, and there's cats, and it's, you get the life. I feel like, I was meant to be having.
Yeah.
But going back to the Sarah Hahn thing, because I feel like that's a good story. Sarah's sister-in-law bought one of my pieces, bought this, I think, It was via this auction, this charity auction, or this donation, this giving of something to the world that then Sarah found my work and ended up buying a work which has gone to LA. And then, I mean, as always, every connection has another connection, this beautiful unfolding of.
And how many weeks in Ethiopia? Was it 2 weeks in Ethiopia?
It was 2.5 by the time I got back, and I went right. You just did this tour, went right round, and it was just before it got really dangerous. Like now it's quite dangerous. And so, you know, whenever I'm traveling, I never read. I've been to Tunisia. I've been to a lot of places. I never read.
Yeah, like, you just go.
I want to know because I want to always be led with love and like a certain naivety in the world that allows me to not be in fear.
Yeah.
I never read all the things that could potentially go wrong ever.
Yeah, and you want to be sort of fresh with that artist eye. Yes.
Yeah.
See the painting above your head, actually.
And yeah, this
audience is audio, but they can visualize. Oh, it's unbelievable.
So this is one I painted when I came back from Ethiopia because of the Coptic Christian influence.
It's a very intricate line.
Yeah.
It's a very delicate. Yeah,
it's so precise.
Yeah, it's almost got a little bit of Magritte feeling to it, you know, the symbolism, even though it's geometric.
Yeah.
And the works that I've seen, you are heavily influenced by symbols and then birth them into geometry.
Yeah, very much. It's like been this journey of creating my own. So when I grew up, I spent a lot of time in the Northern Territory with Indigenous artists primarily as my friends, and you know, I mean, I was young, so I'm not like looking for influence. I'm just there as a young person.
Yeah,
but they use so much of their work is using forms for symbolism and storytelling and narrative. So they'll have a whole narrative in this work, which I love, and it's just the symbolism. And so I feel like for me, I've always been kind of wanting to have, and also I've had a lot of really difficult experiences in my life, so it's like, how do I paint this story or tell this story, but in a way that is soft and people can come into the work or into the story and not be like assaulted by like imagery, but then, you know, and so these thought catches, the sculptures, like all these little things that have ended up becoming, sorry, they're within my work. They all serve a purpose. So it's like a person. This is like me.
We will feature some of the artwork when we do the podcast post, but this particular work, You Hold a Mirror to Me, I just think is so delicate and intricate and precise, yet you seem so spontaneous, right? You seem like a real, like true artist, like, but then the artwork is so intricate and has that perfection to it. Mm-hmm. It's sort of the opposite of what I would expect.
Yeah, it's like the grounding, the work for me. And I actually, you know, I'm painting almost all the time. I'm really not painting. And then when I painted this show for Michael Reed, because I was going to France, I'm going to France to do this sculpture install and all this other stuff. And so I have really just got bogged down in administration. And then I was in hospital last week and I was like, I know why. It's because I haven't been painting. And so I've burnt myself out. Like, and so.
What were you in hospital for? Just for exhaustion? Or?
I had COVID and then.
I saw that post actually.
I took my kids to the. I had COVID. Then it was school holidays. And so when I have my kids, I want to enjoy it all so much. And so I took them to the mountains hiking for a week after I'd had COVID and by myself, you know, like single parenting with, I mean, they're great kids, but it's still an exertion of energy when I'm traveling, especially with them. And then when they left that second week, I got very high temperatures and it was just burnout. It's just burnout. But because it's my actual work is really good for my health. Like it allows me to have all these fast concepts and ideas and energy very calmly then transmuted into the making of the work, which I put it on Instagram and things like that. Sorry, I'll silence
myself. Do you Do you like the work of Hilma af Klimt as
you
well?
know, she's only recently come to my attention, and that's one of the things, because I don't have an arts educational background, like formally, so everything, all of my education is me obsessively wanting to find out about something.
That's the best way, the best inspiration. And it doesn't have to necessarily be an artist.
I'm very interested in philosophy and science and scientific, because I see also this merging now of larger ideas about consciousness that science is also being able to validate, which I find really fascinating, and religion, because I grew up, you know, with a minister and very religious family. So I see all these, and all this threads back through my work, is these ideas of who we are in the world, how we're placed, our storytelling, how we deal with difficult stuff via storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
So recently she came to my attention via another friend who was like, you should look at this work because even though it looks nothing like mine, there's probably some similar aspects to the drawing down of how I work, like and use of the symbolism. And
yeah. Yeah,
exactly.
So your whole life story is just so fascinating. And when I first heard parts of it, I was really drawn to you as a person. Yeah. And then seeing your art and certain works really did respond to me very well. I'd love to see them in the flesh, actually.
Yeah, they're so much better in person. And you know, I'm always telling people, I don't care if anyone buys the work, but just try and go and see it, because, you know, as an artist and someone who's just been really intuitively and obsessively making work without the context of why you're an artist or who an artist is, like, you know, it's been an evolution of me of now understanding my place in the world more. But I remember going and travel's been so important for me, because I grew up in like this isolated little bubble, and so I've been trying to see the world and self-educate and catch up. But I stood in front of I went to London and I stood in front of this friend. I went to Francis Bacon show, and I was like, oh my God, okay, so this is someone who has nailed, who's in that, they are able to go, okay, I've caught all of this emotion and it's in work. And that felt like then the goal for me, to make sure whenever I'm creating work, it's really intentional. And so whatever piece you're standing in front of, you feel it, like it encapsulates you. And I love the larger work for that, like the really large paintings. I feel like you're just going into the world of that work.
Yeah, if we do a show together, which is very much on the cards, and we'll talk about that after the podcast. I really would love to see large medium format paintings, and then a story telling because of our connection with the Women Who Run with Wolves, something to do with, you know, being in the canyon. It's so much about my life, talking with women, telling stories, the storytelling, and
it's really hard for
that
me.
Narrative.
I wrote on my wall, like, who pays for the Women Who Run with Wolves? It's written on my studio wall, because it's like, okay, I'm just content. And I actually, because I write a lot,
what's the question?
It's like, who pays for the woman to run with the wolves? Like, because it's an ideal to go, I'm just going to be an artist. And it's like, okay, so universe, like, someone's going to have to feed me and my children, and how's that going to come about? And it's like been this exercise of just completely, you know, for me, because I'm a single person, I don't get any income from anywhere other than my work, because I've had high integrity when it comes to relationships ending and wanting to be really autonomous, and feeling like actually to be autonomous is the most powerful way for me to be an artist. Because then the work is essentially, it's a through thread between it looking after me and me. Like, I feel like if I look after the work, it will look after me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when it comes back to that whole, you know, I mean, my experience of parenting 5 children and you know, the levels of equality or inequality that either accept or rise to, and then the valuing of the work enough to fight for it, and it's so much. And they're conversations that, you know, I had someone ask me the other day if I was like, you know, I've been a parole officer as well. I work with men who.
That was incredible. Yeah.
And I've got four brothers and I really care about men and I really care about, and I've got two sons and I'm like, I'm not this, I'm so soft when it comes to all the, you know, my being feminine and how me being feminine is going to, like how that looks to me as a single person as well, and how to be soft and be like, let myself be an open channel to everything coming through. Because as soon as you start, you know, for me, as soon as I get into fear or anger or any of the lower emotions, I just immediately see that, like, it's like, and for me, things are like instantaneous. I'm like, oh, the world has got small and nasty.
Yeah, no, and
I want to be an open conduit to work and powerful work, and work that actually, if I'm going to make paintings that go out into the world and they really impact people for whatever reason, then I have to be open. Simple as that.
And where do you see your place in the art world? Because it's quite unique. It's quite juggling motherhood and being very active on social media and connecting with variety of different people. It's very, it seems quite inventive the way you've managed to create a name for yourself.
Yeah, well, I kind of, because I'm very, I follow the things that make me really excited and the people who make me excited. I'm less interested in how things look as how they feel. And so some projects that I've done, other people might find not worthy or not, you know, that's not going to be great for your career per se, but I've never been really interested in that. Mm-hmm. More I follow what makes me feel like, if I'm dragging the chain and I don't really feel like doing something, I've learned to just not do it. And whereas if I'm really excited and it's just like, then everything just clears and it'll be a great project no matter what the context is. And I mean, I got into NFTs when they first came out because my work lends itself to film.
I do love your film. I love
that. I was like, even the animations, I don't know if you've seen the animations that I've made, because my work lends itself so well to, because in my head it's often alive and moving. And mm-hmm. And I did that because, so that's just one thing that I was like, oh, this is one opportunity, whether it's a good idea or a bad idea, for me to be part of a brand new art. Like, so how often do you be part of a brand new movie?
Completely self-taught, no art school, none of that.
It's been an obsessively draw. You know, my parents, I didn't go to school very much. My parents were very like, a bit like the world is going to end. And so, they were travelers and, you know, it was just very unconventional.
Right? Homeschooled?
Well, my father's a teacher, so we often homeschooled, or we went to these little church schools that they started with, you know, really specific ideology being delivered. Mm-hmm. But no real, because I was like a bit of a, I was always good at looking like I was working, but not.
Yeah. You just, but the creative.
But if I was at school, it was pretty low level engagement while I was like, but I was always drawing. And I used to make a lot of things out of, it's funny that I make these installations now of beautiful steel and I don't work in organic matter, because when I was young, I was always making things. It sounds so basic, but like my brothers all fished and we were often, you know, just doing whatever. And I would make by the rivers all these things from sticks and stones and all, like making things really I'm quite obsessive about making things with my hands. And so often an idea will come from some random thing that I'm kind of making, and then, you know, the idea will be evolving all the time. So I'm not attached to what I feel like doing and where it's going to go.
Mm-hmm. And the work in the top right corner, that's a very different style.
Which one? Oh, in my room.
Beside the geometric. That's not you. Already.
Oh, yes, no, that's a friend. That's a guy in Australia. I mean, I really love, so I've got like some really good things. I love to collect. I've got a great Jackie Stockdale there. Like whenever I sell a painting, it's like tithe. I feel like I like to spend 10 or 20% on someone else's work.
That's really
and I've
That's what I do with art sales. Well, that's what I did whenever I saw them, I'd buy like one of the artists.
So I've been doing that for a really long time, as much as I can afford to. And so I have some, you know, collecting from your peers is the most wonderful way to have. So I've got a big old house here that's got some amazing art and collecting Indigenous art. And I've got a Sally. So talking about women, Sally Lee Anderson, who's a great painter in Australia. I've got one of hers there. Love Miranda that. Stockdale, Jackie Stockdale. So this is my bedroom, Jackie Stockdale. Yeah. And then I've got, so when I went to Ethiopia, I did a big art project with the kids. Then we came back and auctioned the work, and I bought that one back from auction because I loved that. But
But really was that one that you did with the Ethiopian kids?
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
That one there with the little.
So it's got the cat.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful.
Pink cat. And then I've got Geordie Kerwick over there, who's a great, amazing Australian painter who's doing really well. I've got one of his paintings. Ida Wild, who's another amazing English artist. Another great, I can't remember her name, but I love her painting. She's in Switzerland. So
stunning.
Zan Whitley. So, yeah, I just, I collect.
Great style. Great.
This is just my bedroom.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. The house is full.
I love it. So I guess, you know, let's talk about, is there power in being a muse? Do you have muses? What do you think about the role of the muse in art?
You know, it's funny because I've come to this very, I used to not understand what a muse was or what a muse could be, and I just felt, you know, pretty much like I am the muse, like, and I actually have done a show that is called I Am the Muse because I had, you
portraits
know that.
Of yourself or portraits?
Yeah, I did. No, it was all of my geometric work, but it was, the premise was this, that, you know, some people have this fear that they're going to run out of an idea or they need external ideas, but it's like, it's not egotistical. It's just like the ideas that are meant for me are going to be coming through me via whatever means. We're like, you know, the book. I read that book, Women Who Run With Wolves. And so then all that generated all these ideas. And so my digesting of that book came out in work. So I'm continually learning. I've got so much catching up to do. Like, and so
I'm going to send you an audio book so you can listen while you paint. But it's
and I do this a lot. I listen to a lot of audio books while I paint.
So it's by Clarissa Pinkola Estes, and it's called Mother Night.
Okay, I don't know that one.
Yeah, I'll send that to you.
That'll be great. That'll be great.
And that could be maybe the Kenyan series.
And that's what happens,
and that's
to me,
you, like mother, like having to, you know, struggle and be in this constant hustle. It's just how do you, so as a mother, you know, could you tell us about how motherhood has affected your art practice and what are some challenges that you have?
God, well, I didn't sleep for years. I'm really high energy, and I've been gifted with five super high energy children. My first two children, because I had them when I was so young, and at that stage I had no life. Like, it was really nice to parent like that. Your parent, it's like, oh my God, I've got these children, like, oh my God, these children. And I didn't have heaps going on, but I did. Because I was working with the gallery and always painting these ridiculous, like everything was just so, because I didn't have a career in mind. It was just me needing to work. So when I got pregnant, I got married, you know, I got married when I was 17 and got pregnant. And then I was like, oh my gosh, what do I do with my time? Because I live somewhere, it was so remote, and my friend, you know, there was this party culture, and then my good friends who were good, they traveled. And so I just literally started painting all the time. So when my daughter would, so I painted as a means to deal with isolation and boredom. And to really start to have, it was like my identity really began to form at that same time. So my work is so entwined with just my life. Like,
and so you weren't going out, and because you were pregnant, it was like
and I was really, I had no car and no money, and I had a really dysfunctional teen, young person's relationship, no real friends. The friends I was wanting to, because this is Northern Territory in the middle of absolute nowhere. What the demographic of people are there, the young people who are there they leave. People don't stay there. If you are there, you leave, you go to university or something. And so I felt this great kind of stuckness. And this has happened to me a few times in my life, that the only way to get unstuck is not physically, but emotion, like the work is my way to go anywhere. Mm. And I can be at home anywhere if I'm working. I'll be content.
Mm.
Drop me in the world. I'll just be content if I've got even pen and paper. And so that's how the work really started to form and my idea. So I would paint all naps, and like, okay, baby's going to be asleep, then I can paint. So I don't need to go out, or I don't need to source. I can self-source my own entertainment all the time.
And when you were a parole officer, did you have a break from painting, or were you able to do it on the weekend?
I worked in exhibits, obviously on a much lower level, because I had the parole stuff too is extremely emotionally taxing, because I really cared and I was a really, really good at that job, and I'm really good at supporting people because I've had a lot of life experiences that are challenging myself. But I'm now, like, then this is 14, 15 years ago, or 20 years ago, 15 years ago, I didn't understand about energy boundaries and emotional boundaries and things that I now know. And so I would just be kind of bereft energetically.
Mm.
And so I was painting from a very different place, to be honest, through those years of being parole. But I did exhibit, I ended up with this job as a parole officer because of my work in schools, my work with people. Like, I didn't plan to get that job, and they offered me the job. I did the study, and it was like, I'm really good at this, and I learned so much. I learned because I was delivering before. I mean, I grew up in the Northern Territory. Then I was going up on the Sydney Parole Board to present people's cases.
Probably, and so it's like,
it was so good for me professionally.
You
it was really
travel to Sydney, present the case with the JLE and to the parole board.
Yeah. So what I worked out of Glen Innes. So it's like 7-8 hours from Sydney. So I would travel back and forth to Sydney. And that's like, I'd met my second husband, who's great, great co-parented my older kids, because at the stage of my first marriage had ended. And so I've always had this huge capacity, huge energy for work and huge energy for expansion and ideas. And at that point in my life, all the energy was going into this, like, career. And I also bought a house. It felt really important to me and one of the reasons I'm able to run with wolves a bit now is because I have really worked really hard to have some financial underpinning that I've given myself. And so now I'm like, the worst that could happen, I can sell my house. Do you mean? So that allows me to have this, like, it takes a few steps for me to be for my art to put me out on the street.
and it won't happen, but and your current house is in Melbourne. Yeah.
No, so I live, this is another bizarre thing, I live 3.5 hours out of Melbourne. It takes me 7-8 hours every time I go in.
Right. And the two.
But my children live out here with their dad. Well, and me too, but this is where they're.
And your first husband from the Northern Territory is back over there?
No, he passed away. Oh, yeah, he died. No, that's okay. And that's part of the my life experiences of having these, like, big loves and death has taught me more than life has. Like, losing people and that space between life and death is where so much is revealed to, has been revealed to me about our consciousness and about what really matters. Because I'm a very relaxed person in so many ways, because I've had some people who, like, I live really quite fully, because I might not be Like, I don't want to like live my life like stodgily and planning to, you know, be on a pension when I'm 80. And because I, you know, we don't get the guarantee of time. And so I'm going to just keep showing up really fully all the way.
So brave. So brave.
Well, but the bravery comes from reality. Like my close calls. My father died last year and he was 66. And he didn't drink and he didn't smoke and he was vibrant. And it's like, and he thought he was going to live to, he had plans for to be to his 90s, just started writing a new book. Like, and it's like, so yeah, so I live with that very, and that comes back to my parenting too. I have this thing, it's like there's love and there's devotion. And I want my children to feel that I'm very, when I'm with them, I'm very devoted to them. And that feels different than say love or care. But devoted to something, it's like, oh, I'm in this person's line of interest. Like my parent, my children, there's just things that I do for them, things that I cook for them or all these little things that I do that are just devotion.
Yeah, that's so
sweet. And the devotion lasts longer than time, because you can have 24 hours with someone and not be devoted to them and not engage.
That's the thing. I felt, you know, that I wanted to get this interview done so that we could connect after being your big.
Yeah, I'm so glad.
And part of me was battling between, oh, it's this finite amount of time when my kid's home from school. But I feel that now we've done the interview, I'm going to be more devoted to them. Because I'm not going to be thinking about, because she's
freed up your mental load.
I'm thinking about the interview with you and I'm like, this isn't being present. I need to do the interview. Yeah. And now I feel so blessed that we've had time together. Yeah.
And also, I mean, I love to be doing things and not be prepared, because I think so much of my life that has happened and works is in that balance between being an organized, prepared, you know, meticulous person in some ways, and then the other part is just like, I'm so open to now being the, you know. And I think when I messaged you the first time, when I had COVID, because I was like, okay, I've got COVID and I was really not well, but then part of me was very well, because I was like, all right, I can use this time when I can't move to really have a think about what I want to do and, you know, where I'm going. And and I was like, oh, I've been meaning to write to you for so long, but life goes at this fast pace. So I'm so glad.
Grateful you did, Jasmine. And I'm really excited to send you Mother Night. And we're doing this series in the Kenya now, and I know that so many of the women would respond so well to the painting. So and men as well, you know,
I have a lot of men like that.
It has a bit of a masculine edge to it.
It has a real masculine energy. And, you know, it's a wonderful thing for me. Well, see, I feel like I have a lot of masculine energy in some way, but I'm very gentle with it because of my growing up in the outback, and I've got four brothers, and I really care about men, and I feel like I can understand a man's psyche really well. But often what happens to me, it's a really good thing, is that say an interior designer will be like, oh, finally the husband likes someone's work, it'll be mine. Because of I think the precision, and also so I use beautiful linen and everything's framed, like everything's hand done. And so men often engage with my work on a material level, like, and a precision.
And it's architectural as well.
Yeah. They appreciate the detail and they don't want flowers in their room or something.
No, I love it.
It's usually an aesthetic. It's like an aesthetic. There's an aesthetic appeal to men, for men in my work. I think probably there's part of my brain that the part that generates all of this imagery and this, you know, there's a mathematical part of my brain that highly functions, even though it's like not part of my conscious. Like, it's not consciously part of what I'm doing, but then subconsciously that's so strong. And I think a lot of men that, you know, can relate to, and that's just being very gender specific, you know, gender, not gender specific, whatever you want to call it.
You're not generalizing here. It's just
yeah.
And the feeling, it's, Oh, I am so grateful for our talk
Yeah,
today,
thank
and
you.
I'm even more excited by your work as well, which is
Thank
really
you.
amazing.
That means so, and it means so much for me that people like appreciate the work, especially it's, you know, as an artist, it takes time for your work to find its people,
Yeah.
find its audience, especially my work is quite specific. So, but it has to be like that,
Well, one of
you
the
know.
artists that I've shown that who I adore, George Byrne, he's an incredible Australian photographer who's based in LA, and his work is very geometric. And I've often said to him, I wonder, like, it'd be so interesting to see your work as a painting, or, you know, and it's something that we've discussed together. And it's I will send you his work. It's very, I'm
Right.
always inspired by it. I see him as a painter, you know, just with the medium of photography. And I see your work has just such an interesting energy to it, and it is so profound, and it is so linear, and it could be a photograph, but it's painting, which is where I come from as an
People
artist.
often say it's digital work, but I'm actually, I don't have any digital skill. Like I don't even have the skills to do a color mock-up. So everything I do is completely intuitive, and you know, like this, I don't plan it. I just start with the, you know, so sometimes I'm like, I think I'll do a painting about this, and then I do a painting about something completely different. So
Do you ever sort of paint over, say there's like a section and then you're like, I'm not happy with it, I'm going to paint over that, and then,
I don't really
or
do
is
that with my work because it's too flat. And so also because all the pencil, all the lines in my work are actually the pencil line, the linen line.
I
And
love
so
that.
because I'm creating, so I paint to leave the original line. What it does too is it makes the work, even though it's geometric, feel really like it feels really soft.
Yeah.
Like it's
Yeah,
so soft.
it's very intentional. There's
Yeah,
another
so
artist, Caitlin Keogh. I'm gonna send you her. I mean,
that would be
it's just interesting to have these references and know that you're totally on the right track, and it's a different path, but it's relevant to painting today, which is
great. Yeah,
good.
it's just, I think you end up because also I haven't had the training, the background. So I've always been obsessed with these micro techniques that are now very signature to my work. So things that I just enjoyed doing are now really important to the work, and I can see why. So no, I can't really paint over. So most of the time, yeah, I don't mean the idea is that you can look and you can see the original drawing.
Which is such precision. It's
It's a
really.
lot of precision, and it's just my, that is like, you know, in terms of like the tiny geniuses that every individual human being has,
Yeah, you have
my
it.
tiny genius is to go, I can just draw this thing, like, and it's going to be, you know, because I just use my eye. I don't use a lot of ruling or measurement because when I was younger, I used to do rule, and I was like, it always looks so hard and flat. So now I know that our human eye, like with the way we look at things, we're not looking at a thing that you can measure with a ruler and it's going to be right. So it's always my eye that's adjusting to the painting. So then it always feels, for anyone looking at it, it feels like this natural scene.
Magician, that's what it is. Yeah.
So that's my little bit of genius. All the rest is like
And send me a full JPEG of that painting that is behind you, because I would love to have it as.
I wanted to keep that one. Yeah, so so this is, so in Ethiopia there, and I know we're going past time, but in Ethiopia they're Orthodox Christian, like the Coptic, you know, and because of this agreement between the Muslims and the Christians a long, long time ago, all of their it's all been preserved, and it's incredible. I didn't realize this, but the churches, and so I did this painting, and this is the Coptic, one of the Coptic crosses, and that's, this is the thought catcher, which is also the self. So this was like my relationship to religion, or like, you know, it's like a juxtaposition of how I am as myself, and then this greater picture of all of the theology and all of the world's philosophies and how we as humans are interacting with that.
I love it, Duncan. It's a
Time
pleasure
we're
to talk with you. I could talk with you for date.
Yes. Shut up now.
We will continue. And thank you so much for being on Women.
Yeah, thank you for making time to talk to me. I'm so glad we could get this done while life is, and I'm off to France on Monday to install one of these thought catchers in a castle grounds.
Oh my gosh. So good. Send photos. Okay.
I will. All right.
All right.
Cool. Looking forward to talking to you more.
Bye.
This has been the Women as an Art podcast, hosted by me, Leah Schwegel. Please visit womenasanart.com for more information and to find us on socials. Thanks.